Texas school districts learning lessons on how to deal with a statewide emergency. Teaching in a time of pandemic, the role of the schools today on the Texas Standard.
Texas Standard is a production of KUT Austin, KERA North Texas, Houston Public Media, and Texas Public Radio in San Antonio, with support from Rand Group, software delivered as promised. No surprises.
I'm David Brown. It's far from business as usual for the state schools. Top education officials say many could be closed through the end of the academic year. What this means for school advancement and support for kids from economically disadvantaged backgrounds. Also, what social distancing adds up to on the economic front for families, and how to talk to your kids about this time like no other. All these stories and much more today on The Standard. We'll get started right after this. No matter where you are, you're on Texas Standard Time on the 17th day of March, 2020. I'm David Brown. Great to have you with us. A line from a New York Times article this morning sticks out in my head. Pandemics, Michael Kimmelman writes, prey on our human desire for connection, undermining our most basic ideas about community. And so it would seem, as officials consider tighter restrictions on mobility, urging us all to take more seriously the importance of social distancing. As important as that is, there are two ways to view this undertaking. One is to view ourselves as increasingly hemmed in by a growing cloud of fear. The other is to recognize this moment as one of the greatest community mobilization efforts in our history, perhaps since World War II. In other words, remember, we're doing this for ourselves and for others. This moment can be a denial of community or a declaration of it. Can you think of five people in your contact list you haven't been in touch with for a while? Why not resolve to make five phone calls today, just to say hello and check in on them? While you've got the phone handy, perhaps there's a small business in town you suspect might be struggling right now. Maybe you call and ask them if they sell gift cards. Might be a nice way to let them know you appreciate the role they play in your community. They definitely appreciate the business. Here's another. What if we resolve to come up with small things we could do to support others in our community. Maybe call a neighbor, run an errand. What's your idea? Let us hear from you at Texas Standard on Twitter or on Facebook, and we can share it with our community. Something all our communities are bracing for, the likelihood that a season of social distance will go way longer than just a week after spring break. As Texas Education Agency Chief Mike Morath has warned, schools might have to remain closed through the academic year. Now what? How are we, how are our educators, how are our kids supposed to move forward with so many unknowns? We are joined by a cast of experts. Aaliyah Swaby is education reporter for the Texas Tribune. Aaliyah, good to have you back on the big broadcast. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Susan Kincannon is the superintendent of the Waco Independent School District. Dr. Kincannon, welcome to the Texas Standard.
Thank you. Good morning.
August Plock is a high school U.S. history teacher at the Pflugerville Independent School District in Travis County. Mr. Plock, welcome to the Texas Standard.
Good morning. Thank you.
Aaliyah, let's begin with you. Where do we stand with how many schools in Texas are currently closed because of concerns about that coronavirus?
The last count I've seen is from Sunday afternoon. It was just under 600, which is more than half of the school districts in Texas. Unlike other states, Texas has allowed locals to decide whether they're going to close, and other states have required all of their schools to close. So we're doing it really differently.
I want to bring in Superintendent Kincannon here because you've had to make some hard decisions there for Waco. How long will Waco schools be closed, at least as you see it now?
Yes, we plan to be closed through March 27th initially, and that decision was made in coordination with area superintendents who got together last Friday morning to discuss our response and plans.
Well, so that doesn't sound like as long as perhaps some other school districts are saying that they're going to remain closed through into April. Will you be reconsidering this at some juncture, or what is your next step?
Yeah, we're taking it a week at a time. This week, obviously, we're preparing instruction for next week, kind of our stage one plans for our students and preparing to distribute instructional supports for them on Monday. And then beyond that, we'll plan for the next week and see how this develops.
I know a lot of kids, a lot of parents too, depend on services provided by schools like meals. You know, how's your district dealing with that?
Yes, we do have a large percentage of economically disadvantaged students, and our child nutrition department, in collaboration with Baylor's Texas Hunger Initiative, worked diligently over the weekend to prepare for serving meals as early as yesterday morning. So we have identified churches and community centers all throughout the community where breakfast and lunch is being served as we speak.
I want to bring in August Plock, who's a teacher there at Pflugerville ISD. You specifically teach 11th graders U.S. history, as I understand it. What are you hearing now from your district, and how are you going to resume and when?
Well, our district right now is officially on spring break this week. And then Pflugerville ISD announced yesterday that they will extend spring break 1 week, so through March 27th, and then reevaluate and see where we're at that time. I know our district is now potentially looking at how could we service our students if we have to have a long-term school closure.
Well, yeah, let's talk about the nuts and bolts of that. Some schools have discussed teleconferencing in students. Is that a practical solution for you there in Pflugerville?
It may or may not be, depending on what type of technology students have available. So we're looking at potentially high-tech options, such as what you just mentioned, and also potentially looking at low-tech options, such as using our school bus fleet, that they would roll through certain neighborhoods on certain days to deliver meals to our students, as well as to drop off packets where students then would have access to work at home, return the packets when the bus comes back.
Aaliyah, something else that was announced yesterday, the STAR standardized achievement tests here in Texas, those have been put on hold or completely scrapped for the year.
So the state will not require school districts to make students take it this year. That doesn't mean that all students won't take it. Mm-hmm. That just means it's up to, if locals want to offer the STAR test because they want to get the data that tracks how their students are doing, they can. I think that the state is working with them to do it in a way that's safe, and so that students have, or districts have, the tools that they need to track the achievement, but without risking student safety. But it is, for most students, it will be canceled this year.
Superintendent Kincannon, what have you decided to do with that STAR test?
Oh, we'll absolutely be canceling it. We obviously are losing a couple of weeks of instruction, and we would certainly want to take that pressure off of our students and our staff for this school year.
But if you do that, and I think this is something that's come up, what about advancement for young people? Are they going to be able to just progress into the next grade if, in fact, there are no STAR tests and school is canceled for the remainder of the year or something like that?
You know, we have we're pretty data rich on our students. We test them frequently on student expectations that are measured on the STAR, so we know our students' academic achievement, and we can make decisions based on the data that we have. And so the STAR would not be the only indicator of a student's success and the reason for them to pass from one grade level to another.
Mr. Plock, now let me ask you, as a working teacher, are you concerned about the possibility of layoffs or job actions that could affect your livelihood?
Well, teachers are on a contract, so we're guaranteed employment with our school districts. Who I am concerned for is one-third of your employees that work for a school district are hourly employees, mm-hmm. and how will they be able to continue to be paid? Right now, the Commissioner of Education for the state of Texas, Mike Morant, has not declared an emergency here in Texas, and so that does not free up state funding for local school districts, which will require districts to dip into their fund balances, which is their emergency money, mm-hmm. to be able to maintain payroll. Most districts have a 60 to 90 day contingency, but if we're out for a long-term period, it could put financial stress on school districts.
There are a lot of parents right now who are frankly concerned about what they do if they have to watch out for their kids who aren't, you know, they're not going to be in school. Any advice, any suggestions, any wisdom?
Yeah, this is Dr. Tim Cannon. I think this is a time for the community to come together and parents to help each other. I've obviously seen lots of posts on Facebook where teenagers are helping other families and people are just pulling together to do what they need to do during this time.
Aaliyah, what do you think the likelihood is? I mean, are you hearing anything about further action from state education officials?
There will be more guidance put out on some of those more granular questions on, you know, what happens with graduation, what happens with testing. So not everything has been released yet. There's more in the works. Back to the parents, I've talked to a lot of parents for a story I'm working on for today who, you know, despite the best efforts of district officials, are falling through the cracks, you know, and they're not sure what's going to happen. They don't have internet. They don't know where to look in terms of where to get the free meals that they need. They don't have cars to get there, and the sites are too far for them. It seems like there are some districts that are doing more to actually go to those parents, mm-hmm. but not all of them. I think that's some of the concern moving forward, is that not everyone will be reached for those services that they'll still need.
You should go over to texastribune.org and check out the work of Aaliyah Swaby, who continues to cover this story. Dr. Susan Kincannon is superintendent of the Waco Independent School District. August Plock is a high school U.S. history teacher at the Pflugerville Independent School District in Travis County. Folks, thanks so much for spending a bit of your day with us on the Texas Standard. We appreciate your insights.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, the Standard's Michael Marks monitoring social media statewide on this Tuesday. Michael, what you hearing out there?
David, a lot of response to the conversation we just heard about the coronavirus's effect on education mm-hmm. in Texas. You really just can't overstate the ripple effect that comes from closing some of these schools. Yeah. That's certainly being borne out in the comments over on the Texas Standard Facebook page. Rachel Anthony tells us, my fourth grader is off for another week of spring break. They closed my toddler's daycare for this week. My company won't allow me to come back to work for 14 days since my husband and I took an international flight back from Ireland on Saturday. Mm-hmm. To say this time is stressful is an understatement. Laura Wright tells us she's trying to juggle working full-time to adapt college curriculum online while also staying at home to care for my toddler full-time. And part of this message from Christina Westfield in Brenham, she writes, our family is very fortunate that I work from home and can look after our four kids. We have access to internet, but very few can work from home. I wish there was a better way to help those families. Certainly just huge, huge effects when something like this happens to the education system.
Yeah. Hey, listen, listeners, you got an idea on how to help others in your community? Reach out to us. Wanderlust326 says she made a donation to the Central Texas Food Bank yesterday because we're all in this together.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas CASA, advocating for a safe and positive future for all Texas children in the child protection system. Volunteer information at becomeacasa.org. Every child has a chance. It's you.
You got to tune to the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. The homeless population is especially vulnerable to COVID-19, and this creates serious challenges for those committed to helping them. From KERA in North Texas, Bill Zeeble has more.
Dallas nonprofits that routinely help the homeless have now been forced to change how they do that. One big reason, says Pastor Wayne Walker, CEO of Our Calling, is because helpers may bring harm.
It's our staff and volunteers who, you know, may go to a Stars game or eat at a restaurant or went to visit somewhere on spring break. You know, the homeless community pretty much stays in the same space. So the only way they're going to get exposed is if we bring it to them.
Walker says the homeless population is vulnerable in some of the same ways nursing home residents are.
Not only do they have the health issues because of age and underlying health challenges, but they're also vulnerable because they stay in public spaces, they share utensils, and then they don't have any space to go wash their hands or kind of take care of basic hygiene needs.
Walker says his staff has already stopped allowing the homeless inside the Our Calling building. Extra shelter space for the homeless has been opened in the Dallas Convention Center, but that's not necessarily for more beds. It's to provide a safer space between those beds. I'm Bill Zeeble in Dallas.
Support for Coverage of Business comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping companies protect their drivers on the road. More at worksafetexas.com/onthejob.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. In a move not seen since the Great Recession of 2008, the Federal Reserve cut interest rates by a whole percent down to an effective 0%. The idea is to make money easier for banks to lend and, by extension, make borrowing cheaper for consumers, too. Make it easier for people facing tough times to borrow. But as you may have noticed, credit card companies aren't exactly racing to lower your interest rates. So where's the disconnect here? And while we're on the subject, What could consumers be doing to brace themselves for what many fear is an inevitable economic downturn? Ann Bedour is director of the Fair Financial Services Project at Texas Appleseed. It's a public interest group with a focus on what it describes as social and economic justice for all Texans. Ann, welcome to Texas Standard.
Thank you so much for having me.
I suppose we should begin with something of a primer for the average individual who may not necessarily understand what it means when they hear news that the Fed has cut rates down to an effective zero. Why should they care, and should they care? Are they directly affected?
The role of the Federal Reserve Board is to support the stability of our national economy. And so a lot of the moves that the board is taking are looking at the broad economic systems. The drop of the federal funds rate to near or practically zero should have some short-term impacts on consumer credit. The idea is that it will bolster economic activity, support the availability of credit in the market. Many people's credit cards are tied to the federal funds rate.
Right.
And so presumably they should see a small reduction in the rates on their credit card. But if you look at it financially, a 1% reduction for an individual is probably not going to make a huge bottom line impact on their expenses. And this is really looking more at systemically creating more stability in our economy.
Yeah, I totally take your point. But it is a question that I think a lot of people have, especially if they are already in debt and they're thinking, do I really need to continue to compound my interest the way I have been? I mean, is now the time to call up your credit card company and say, hey, we're going to be facing some economic issues. Could I renegotiate my interest rate? I mean, or is that a pie in the sky?
So all the financial services regulators have put out statements asking banks, credit unions, and other financial service providers to work with consumers. And so I think it's important for anybody who's experiencing hardship to call their lenders, to call their financial institutions, because they should work with you. And this is a time where we're all struggling, where everybody's facing financial constraints. So I'm hopeful that they will address people's concerns and help them work through this time.
But you say hopeful. Creditors don't have an obligation, or do they?
They don't have an obligation, but they do have an interest in people maintaining their accounts and maintaining their payments as much as possible. There are also other tools our communities have, our cities have, to address the crisis at hand.
Say more.
For example, some counties in Texas are instituting eviction bans, so they're not going to be processing eviction cases or evicting people at least for the next 60 days. There are also some utilities have stepped up, particularly public utilities, and are not going to engage in any shutoffs during this crisis period. So there are a lot of other tools to address these very basic needs that families have. And I think it's going to be essential that our counties and our utilities and other basic needs providers step up at this time to stop the crisis from having such a harmful impact that we come out on the other side with families displaced and sort of the worst case scenario. We have a lot of tools to stop that from happening, and hopefully our governments will step up, our courts will step up to address that crisis.
Yeah, do you see more echoes of 2008 and the recession there, or do you think that we will be able to make it out the other side? I mean, I know we talked about not going down the crystal ball route, but how do you see this playing out?
Well, it's hard to predict what's going to happen. In my lifetime, I've never experienced anything like this in terms of the global impact of this pandemic.
But what we do know is when times were good here in Texas, 42% of Texas families didn't have enough money to cover their household budgets. And what this is elevating for us is the importance of safety nets. Because for a while now, we've been diminishing a lot of those safety nets for families. You know, Texas has some of the highest uninsured rates in the country. 22% of working Texans don't have health insurance. And so I think it's really going to force us to look at these issues and see what we can do as a society to create a stronger foundation to weather these kinds of crises.
Let's talk about some hard decisions here. You have a stack of bills in front of you. What do you do with that if you've been laid off? How do you go through that?
It's really important in the end to prioritize basic needs. If I have to personally choose between putting food on the table for my family and paying a credit card bill, I will put food on the table for my family. I will pay my rent. I will make sure that my family has a roof over its head. I mean, when we have to make these tough decisions in tough times, we have to prioritize the immediate well-being of our families. You know, and my hope is that creditors will understand that families are having to make these decisions. You know, at the time of a crisis, like during Hurricane Harvey, the federal regulators came down and there was a moratorium. They couldn't foreclose on people. There were certain rules put into place. And right now, we don't have those requirements in place. So it's really, we're counting on the sort of joint interest of the creditors and their customers to work together to solve these problems. And hopefully we'll get to a good outcome. But for families, we need to make those hard choices sometimes. And for me personally, I would choose to feed my family over paying a credit card bill.
Ann Bedour is director of the Fair Financial Services Project at Texas Appleseed. Ms. Bedour, thanks so much for taking a few minutes out to talk with us on the Texas Standard. We certainly do appreciate it.
Great. Thank you so much.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas Oncology, with a reminder that March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. Screening can lead to early detection and is recommended for all men and women age 45 and older. More at TexasOncology.com.
From the Texas Newsroom, I'm Joseph Leahy. State health officials are confirming the first death of a Texas resident who tested positive for COVID-19. The patient was a man in his late 90s who died Sunday at Matagorda Regional Medical Center. The Department of State Health Services is investigating how the patient contracted the illness. The Republican Party of Texas is hoping to push back its state convention following advisories from the Trump administration and the CDC to limit the size of public gatherings. The convention was originally set for May 11th to 16th at the George R. Brown Convention Center in Houston. Now the goal is to hold it from July 13th through 18th at the same location. Texas GOP Party Chairman James Dickey explains what steps need to be taken before the change can be finalized.
We jointly with the Texas Democrat Party have asked Governor Abbott to waive some of the requirements in the law that are necessary to allow our rules to function and our state Republican Executive Committee to approve the date change.
The state Republican Executive Committee will meet April 4th to decide whether to approve the date change. Pickup and drop-off at licensed daycares in Texas now must happen outside with rare exceptions. KUT's Nathan Bernier reports it's part of an effort to reduce the spread of coronavirus.
The Texas Health and Human Services Commission sent guidelines to almost 17,000 licensed child care facilities across the state, telling them to limit who can enter their buildings. All children, employees, and visitors have to have their temperature taken when they get to the facility each day. If it's over 100.4 degrees, the state says they should be denied entry. Same goes if they're just showing signs or symptoms of a respiratory illness, like a cough, sore throat, or low-grade fever. Also to be denied entry to daycares, anyone who's had contact with someone diagnosed with COVID-19 or anyone who's traveled in the last 14 days to one of the countries with widespread sustained community transmission. I'm Nathan Bernier in Austin.
A couple of state agencies are getting new officials. As Houston Public Media's Sasha Cordner reports, Governor Greg Abbott announced two new appointments in the last few days.
They include Phil Wilson, who's now the acting executive commissioner for the Texas Health and Human Services Commission. In his previous role, he led the Lower Colorado River Authority. Wilson replaces Courtney Phillips, who left the position after more than a year on the job. Her last day was Friday.
And yesterday, Abbott also appointed Hassan Mack to the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission. I'm Joseph Leahy for the Texas Standard.
Support for these Texas headlines comes from Fairmont Austin, offering the Texas Residence Package for folks making the capital city their home base for a weekend getaway with live music, dining, and exploring. More info at fairmontaustin.com.
33 minutes past the hour, Texas Standard Time. I'm David Brown. With the number of confirmed coronavirus cases growing in Texas, the divide between those with health coverage or paid sick leave and those without is growing, and that's making local and state response to the outbreak considerably more challenging. As part of KERA's One Crisis Away project, Christopher Connolly looks now at how the issue of public health is complicated with so many Texans living on the financial edge.
Some of the guidance for keeping yourself and others safe and slowing the spread of the novel coronavirus is easy for most people. Wash your hands thoroughly and often. Cough into your elbow. Avoid touching your face. Other advice is trickier, like telling people who may have been exposed to stay home from work or to go to the doctor if they have symptoms.
That seems like a very fair thing to ask people.
Erin Carlson directs the Graduate Public Health Program at the University of Texas Arlington.
But if you do not have health insurance, if you do not have sick leave, that's a very difficult thing to actually do.
5 million Texans don't have health insurance, so they may not have a primary care doctor to call. Even more Texans are underinsured, which leaves people wondering if they can afford to go get tested. And about 40% of Texas workers don't have paid sick leave. Many of them, like home health aides and restaurant workers, have jobs that put them at particular risk for contracting or spreading viruses.
If your child is sick, how are you going to stay home and take care of that child if, again, you don't have sick leave? So a more likely scenario is you send the child to school sick because you cannot afford to lose those wages. Or if you feel sick, you're going to continue to work because you can't afford losing those wages.
Research shows that people generally want to follow public health guidance and keep their communities safe. But for many people, it's a devil's bargain. The U.S. stands apart from other wealthy industrialized nations because it doesn't require sick leave or guarantee health care. And Carlson says that presents a challenge to the public health systems that respond to pandemics like coronavirus.
Even though we have fantastic public health preparedness in the United States, and in North Texas hospitals, we are remarkably well prepared for this disease. I have no fear about that. That's not what makes us vulnerable. It's that people won't use those resources because they perceive that they cannot afford them. So that's how we are more vulnerable in containing this outbreak than other developed nations.
State and federal governments are trying to respond. Some businesses are rolling out new sick leave policies, and public hospitals and clinics will treat people who are ill regardless of their ability to pay. But there are more challenges. How does someone who's homeless self-quarantine? And when schools and daycares close, parents may be forced to stay home and lose income. Public health professor Diana Cervantes from the University of North Texas Health Science Center says it also means kids who rely on school meals could go hungry.
They eat breakfast at school, they eat lunch at school, and there's a lot of school districts that have pantries for kids that they can take home some non-perishable foods to make it through the weekend.
Cervantes used to work for Tarrant County Public Health and the Texas Department of State Health Services.
That was a big lesson learned during the 2009 flu pandemic. It's like, okay, well, how are we still going to distribute food to these kiddos? And how are we going to do it in a way that isn't going to say, hey, let's mass gather people to give out food?
previous disease outbreaks have made public health officials better at navigating these challenges. Cervantes says public health departments tap nonprofits to make sure people's basic needs are met. They reach out to employers to make sure jobs are secure when a worker needs to be quarantined. When Ebola came to Dallas, epidemiologists delivered formula and diapers to people in isolation.
I think when you work as an epidemiologist and you're working with disease prevention control, it becomes part of your day-to-day life, dealing with people who don't have the resources, and how are you going to be able to do that?
Cervantes says one good thing she's seeing in this coronavirus response, there's been more discussion earlier on about how to help people who are vulnerable to more than just the disease. I'm Christopher Connolly in Fort Worth.
Well, Texas Governor Greg Abbott has postponed a special election to replace a state senator earlier this year. Kirk Watson of Austin announced his plans to leave the Texas legislature to become the first dean of the University of Houston's Hobby School of Public Affairs, which left his seat in the Texas Ledge open. A special election for that seat was set for May 2nd. Well, that's not happening, at least not on May 2nd. Citing coronavirus considerations, Governor Abbott issued a proclamation pushing the special election for the state Senate District 14 back another 2 months to July 14th. Hey, parents, how do you talk to your kids about what we're going through right now? Dr. Jeff Temple, a professor and psychologist at UT Medical Branch in Galveston, he's got some tips, and he's coming up next here on the Texas Standard. Don't you touch that dial.
Support comes from Texas Children's Hospital, focused on outcomes and care, and providing treatment to kids in the Lone Star State and beyond for more than 60 years. Texas Children's Hospital, personalized care for every child. More at texaschildrens.org. Support for Texas Standard comes from TCU, where Horned Frogs strive to be responsible world citizens. More on how a trip to Norway challenged students' perspectives on mass incarceration and justice at tcu.edu/stories.
You're listening to Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. As we discussed earlier in the show, the future of the school year in Texas is uncertain, but, you know, this is hardly just one long spring break. It certainly doesn't feel like that to a lot of kids. In fact, quite the opposite. For some little ones used to play dates and fun and games and jumpy gyms and this sort of thing, this can be a scary time. What, we can't go to the movies? Uncertainty about the future, the change in routine, missing their friends, it can all take a toll. Question is, how do you talk to your kids about something like coronavirus without further alarming them? With some pointers, Dr. Jeff Temple. He's professor and psychologist at UT Medical Branch in Galveston. Dr. Temple, welcome back to the Texas Standard. Good to talk with you, sir.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, David.
Obviously, this will vary depending on age, but already, you know, some of us who listen to news and consume quite a lot of it have encountered that question. Dad, what's a pandemic? What's the best way to explain what's going on to young children?
Well, I think first and foremost is to be honest and accurate with them and truthful. And this will, like you said, depend on their age. But I do think being honest and accurate is really important. Kids are a lot smarter than we think. They're consuming the same information that we're consuming. They're overhearing our conversations. They're picking up on our anxieties. So I think it's okay to be honest. And in this situation, it's not a terrible thing. It's saying, you know, for little kids, it's comparing it to the flu, but it's a little bit more serious, and we need to stay at home, and you know, walking that line between being honest but not scaring them. So if you're talking to them, and if you're especially anxious, I would wait a little while, let yourself calm down a little bit so they don't pick up on that. With middle schoolers, with high schoolers, you can explain the science behind it and why it's important to social distance and flattening the curve, and they can understand that.
You know, I want to get more to teens and tweens in just a second, but I want to come back to something that you were talking about. You know, when sometimes when you hear something, say, on public radio, and they're talking through a particularly scary, like the number of people who have died as a result of coronavirus, I sort of wonder whether or not it's the duty of a parent to shield kids from that information? Or is that, does that run counter to the spirit of transparency that you sort of want to maintain? I guess a lot of this depends on the age of the child, of course, but how do you know whether or not to sort of protect your child by not allowing them to be exposed to some of these ideas in the media?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. I think one of the things that you said caught my attention, and that is having the news on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week is not really, not only not healthy for an adult, but we should shield our kids all ages from that, and you know, get an appropriate amount of news, however you might get it. But there's no reason that especially young kids needs to hear that over and over again about the statistical counts of who's dying and how many people are dying. And so that first and foremost is limit their exposure to that type of news. And then with respect to talking about them, certainly it depends on the age. There's not a whole lot of sense of striking their fears and anxieties and talking about how many people are dying mm-hmm. with young children. With middle schoolers and high schoolers, you could be more nuanced about it and talk, yes, the death rate is increasing, but you know, that we have to look at this from a global point of view, who's being exposed, you know, the immunocompromised, older individuals, which does not make it okay because these kids have grandparents mm-hmm, and parents mm-hmm. and older teachers, but for their own safety, that, you know, it's pretty rare for kids to get infected with this illness, especially severely ill. So, you know, that's part of that transparency and honesty and accuracy, is that the threat to them, the kids themselves, is mm-hmm. very small.
You know, already getting to the tweens and teens, they're getting a lot of information from their friends and certainly from social media, which brings us to the question, there's a lot of screen time happening in households across Texas right now. It's just, you know, a lot of parents don't know what to do with their kids. I mean, is there a good rule of thumb on limiting exposure? what is the received wisdom at the moment?
So I'll tell you what, the American Academy of Pediatrics has, you know, thanks for screen times for all ages, for young kids, tweens, teens. I think that all goes out the window. You know, kids are bored. They can't do a whole lot of stuff. And it is perfectly acceptable. As a psychologist, as I am, I would give permission to parents to throw the screen time rules out the window for the next couple months.
They're going to love that. This is certainly unlike anything many of us have lived through. And I feel like a lot of folks are feeling like they're in uncharted territory, which raises a question of long-term effects. I mean, is it possible that what we are going through now, that these events may affect kids' emotional health on downrange, or a sense of well-being on down the road? And is there any way to mitigate that, the effects of this stress on our kids?
Yeah, there is going to be long-term consequences. But I will say that kids in this generation have grown up with kind of scary times as it is. With climate change, they have been exposed to natural disasters at a higher rate. They're going to be exposed to illnesses at a higher rate, and all the things that come along with these global warming. And so they have unfortunately grown up with this fear, and this will be what an additional one. So I think that there are some things that we can do to mitigate it, and that goes along with any anxieties and any frustrations, and that is practicing healthy coping mechanisms, which will vary by age, but it is things like deep breathing exercise and mindfulness and being present and being able to not worry about the what ifs. And that takes practice, and that takes good parenting and sometimes good psychology, but that's what's going to, we're going to need to mitigate the short and long-term consequences of things like the coronavirus or climate change.
Since families are perhaps feeling isolated, any tips on other things that we can do, talk about, perhaps get our kids' mind off of what's happening with what's happening outside of our homes?
Yeah, you know, there's been quite a few things that have come across my desk that has been pretty neat. So there's virtual tours and field trips of of quite a bit of things worldwide. I think the Louvre has one, Versailles has one. You know, there's different things like that where you can take these virtual field trips. It's okay to go outside as long as you keep your distance from people. So outdoor activities, to a certain extent, are still allowable. You know, just as long as we practice social distancing, which I actually am going to revert back to an earlier part of the conversation and giving kids of all ages the agency and the power to do something to help prevent the spread of this disease, which is washing your hands and coughing into your elbow and giving people elbow bumps if you run into people, but also social distancing, and that they can be part of the solution and giving them that power.
Dr. Jeff Temple is professor and psychologist at the University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston. Dr. Temple, thanks so much for speaking with us on the Texas Standard.
Thank you so much for having me, David.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Raise Your Hand Texas, working to strengthen public education for all students. More information at raiseyourhandtexas.org. The future of Texas is in our public schools. Support for Texas Standard comes from Rand Group, partnering with small and mid-sized companies by helping to unify their businesses and achieve digital transformation. More at randgroup.com. Software delivered as promised. No surprises.
This is the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. It is one of the biggest parties in a state that loves to throw big parties. It is a centerpiece of social and cultural life in San Antonio, and now, like other major events across the Lone Star State, the Alamo City's iconic 10-day fiesta is on hold. Texas Public Radio's Dominic Anthony reports.
Fiesta has been around since 1891 and has previously been canceled only during World War I and World War II. The Fiesta San Antonio Commission held a press conference. Fiesta 2020 President Jeannie Travis spoke first.
We have concluded that the tradition of Fiesta must continue, but on different date, November 5th to November 15th.
But that time of year is crowded with other events, like Dia de los Muertos at the end of October and the Christmas Riverwalk lighting ceremony at the end of November. San Antonio Mayor Ron Nirenberg says he's not worried about any conflicts.
Is San Antonio a town that can't have more than one party at the same time? We have defied that reality for our entire existence. In fact, I would tell you sometimes it's hard to figure out where the fiesta begins and ends because we're in a constant state of community celebration. What we're saying is that we're going to take precautions necessary to protect your health.
Fiesta is a huge opportunity for musicians, artists, and photographers to make money and get exposure.
We're always very excited for this season. It's our biggest, busiest season. So we're eager to get back on stage and enjoy, you know, being with our fans again. It's such a, you know, in this medium, in this art form, it's especially for lively Latin music. There's a lot of dancing, a lot of, you know, big and closed crowds. And, you know, we feed off of that energy.
Jaime Humberto Mejia is the band leader and songwriter for San Antonio band Volcan, which took a break over the winter and had about 8 events lined up, including 4 official Fiesta events. The band won't experience the economic impact of the postponement because they have advance deposits from most of the events. But that isn't the case for everyone.
You know, our hearts do go out to our fellow musicians and other members of the community that are being, you know, affected by this economically in a heavier way, definitely.
The Fiesta Commission says the event has an economic impact of more than $340 million each year. Fiesta Executive Director Amy Shaw says the postponement shouldn't hurt that.
Well, 75% of the people who attend Fiesta events live within 50 miles of San Antonio, so that's the bulk of it. November weather is pretty sweet in San Antonio. I think the average temperature is about 75, and there are only 4 days of rain in November on average, so it might be pretty good.
Some epidemiologists have warned that the coronavirus could subside over the summer, but then return in the fall and winter, like the flu.
We will be hand in glove with Metro Health and the city of San Antonio like we have been for the last several weeks, and just keep watching it.
Like South by Southwest, the Fiesta timeframe also includes a number of unofficial events. San Antonio officials say no city-owned venues will be available to them, and the Fiesta Commission says they won't provide insurance. I'm Dominic Anthony in San Antonio.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. Michael Marks, monitoring social media statewide on this Tuesday. Michael, what you seeing?
Hey, David. First, just wanted to elaborate on some of the sad news we heard during the roundup. Sunday night, a man in his 90s who'd contracted the coronavirus died in Matagorda County. That's a fairly rural area southwest of Houston.
Right.
This is the first confirmed death in Texas from the coronavirus. Health officials say the man may have contracted it through community spread, but still working to trace it back to the source. Some of the reactions from local officials on this include Speaker of the Texas House of Representatives, Dennis Bonin. He tweeted, "With a heavy heart, I share that Texas's first COVID-19 death has occurred in Matagorda County. May memories of this man bring peace to those who knew him and remind us of how important it is to take preventative action so that we can protect the elderly and vulnerable. Certainly our hearts, our condolences go out to his family, all those who are currently battling
indeed,
this thing."
Indeed.
Of course, yesterday, David, a big day for communities across Texas to tighten restrictions on where you can and can't go, how large gatherings can be, all that sort of thing, all in the name of flattening the curve, the phrase we've heard so often,
right.
Social distancing, trying to tamp down transmission. That's why some of the news coming out of spring break hotspots have raised some eyebrows. Want to go to Port Aransas specifically. Port A restricted community gatherings to no more than 50 people yesterday. That doesn't, however, apply to public beaches. And there are evidently plenty of college students on spring break still gathering on the beach. You know, there are images coming out of folks really sort of behaving like normally in some of those locations. As you might imagine, that has sparked some outrage over on the Texas Standard Facebook page. Eva Landry calls that behavior irresponsible. They're showing zero solidarity with those most vulnerable. Likewise, Susan Elaine Blake says it's idiotic. I guess they don't care about anyone elderly or immunocompromised or working in the healthcare system at all. You know, folks really just sort of shocked and mad, quite frankly, that college students would exhibit this kind of behavior. Of course, we've heard from healthcare authorities that younger people, like, say, college students, can still be vectors for the disease,
right,
but are likely less susceptible to it than older people. Given that, wanted to bring up a tweet that I saw this morning from Dr. Peter Hotez. We've had Dr. Hotez on the program before. He's dean for the National School of Tropical Medicine at the Baylor College of Medicine in Houston. Before I read it, just want to be clear, not doing this to be alarmist, but to share information from a credible source. Dr. Hotez tweets a report from Italy where there's some data showing that younger people may be more severely affected by coronavirus than previously thought. Dr. Hotez tweets, an emerging story from Europe is that unlike China, there are many young adults becoming severely ill. Impossible to say yet whether the U.S. outbreak will more closely resemble China or Italy or something unique. You know, I think the bottom line here is that there's still so much we don't know about this virus.
And how
it's behaving domestically in particular. So, you know, to reiterate, health officials continue to say that the safest thing to do is to self-isolate as much as possible. That's regardless of your age.
Exactly. And something else that a lot of newspapers have noted, there seems to be a generational split in terms of how this is viewed. That should not be the case, however. That's the best advice from health officials right now, because so little is actually known about the way that this virus is spreading right now. We're going to bring you the latest as we know it. We're going to deal only in facts here, and we urge you to do the same. You can keep up with those facts at texasstandard.org. We're out of time for the broadcast, but we're going to be back here tomorrow, and we hope you'll join us. Till then, I'm David Brown, wishing you the best of Tuesdays.
Support for Texas Standard comes from the Texas College Savings Plan, administered by the state of Texas. Families can save for tuition, room and board, books, and other qualified education expenses at eligible schools nationwide. Learn more at texascollegesavings.com. Philanthropic support for Texas Standard comes from Casey and Scott O'Hare, the Winkler Family Foundation, Lynn Dobson and Greg Wooldridge, Adrian Killam, and the George Huntington family.